You're listening to Culture Click on KQAL. Today we have part four of Our Polish Heritage. We continue our interview with Father Paul Breza at the Polish Museum of Winona, Minnesota. Last week we discussed food, as well as Polish immigrants trying to fit into the Winona community. We continue on that subject today, and then delve into work and home life, as well as marriage and funeral traditions. Let's pick up where we left off discussing Polish immigrants.
They left from cities there. Lesno, which is about maybe 12 miles from Bytów, lost 300 people in 1 year. When I go to visit Lesno, like last summer, there's probably 500 people in Lesno right now. Well, that's 130 years later. So their population must have dropped down to almost nothing. But they were being fairly well persecuted. That line up there from the German chancellor saying, bash the Poles till they've had enough. You know, they weren't allowed to practice their religion. They were forbidden to speak the Polish Kashubian language. They had to learn German. They couldn't own anything. It was all occupied and owned by German people. And everybody thought, well, that only lasted till 1918, Treaty of Versailles. That's untrue. We were in Germany until 1945, after the Second World War. And then Stalin and Truman and Churchill moved, because Stalin insisted on it. He wanted more Russia. He moved the boundaries of Poland 125 miles to the west. And then what was the end, the western side of Poland, becomes now the center of Poland. So they, German people all were forced to leave. And of course there was nothing left in Poland after the war. So they're dying on the side of the road. You could hear them at night, crying, dying, freezing. And it was easily as pathetic as the exodus for the Jews, but nobody hears about exodus to the Germans. You know, they lost the war, so. But these people weren't soldiers, these people were farmers. But like I said, the farms, the people lived in a little community and they would have some acreage, so it could be kind of farmed cooperatively. You could make some bigger fields if you did things with your neighbors, but generally it was only an acre or two that they owned. You see pictures of the farms, the houses with big yards, backyards, but they sometimes had to walk half a mile to get to their little acreage. And that was kind of a common way to be a farmer. But you obviously never got rich. And at the same time, it was nice because we were able to own property before most of Europe was able to own property. That was forbidden to private individuals. And we received that back in 1683 from King Jan Sobieski, who was fighting the Turks at Vienna. They were losing, and he called for help, and the people from Kashubia came and rescued him with their feather. Reminds you of Indian chief, except their feathers were built up with a wooden frame above their shoulders. Mounted horsemen and hussars, they came and saved the day for Sobieski. And in return, he gave them property, and to signify that, you wound up with an SKI on your name. So I was never one of the lucky ones to have an SKI, so I'm just the Breza instead of Brzezinskiewicz. However, there was moot issue because in 1793, Poland was overthrown by Austria, Prussia, and Russia. Didn't own anything anyway till 1945. And then from 45, the Russians occupied the area. So again, you didn't own anything until 1989, when the wall fell down. But they left cities and came to cities here. Their skills were city skills. They were teachers, nurses, pharmacists, good cooks, but none of that could be practiced because they couldn't speak the language, so they all wound up being common laborers. And that's the theory to some of the historians that studied our exodus from there to here. They claim that according to the census forms, we were all common laborers. So when we came here, we were all poor and ignorant. Well, you can't prove that by the fact that you're common labor. All you can prove is the fact that there were no other jobs that they could occupy, so they all wound up being common laborers. And it was within a generation that they were already inventing their own companies and their own stores, and you know, so obviously they had skills beyond that. And the other thing that kind of proves it, I have hundreds of pictures of Polish guys playing band instruments. Did the sawmill give them a half hour, you know, classical recreation time to pick up a musical instrument? Obviously not, for a buck a day. So they had the skill from someplace to be musicians. The first generation, they looked like real musicians. By about the second, third generation, they still had the instruments, but they were, by that time, they'd made a couple dollars, and they were finding out if you could get rid of all your depression from working this menial job and long hours, 7-6 days a week and 12-hour days. You could get rid of that if you have a drink or two at the end of the day.
What about marriage traditions? If a Polish guy wants to marry a Polish girl, what would happen here in Winona or back?
They'd go to see the priest, set the date, and same day, 2 days later, they'd be married.
Whoa, that fast.
Sure. The parents would say, this guy doesn't have a job, he's not a good fit, you know. My grandmother told this story about the thing that would evolve from the Germans who came in. Obviously, most of them were Lutheran. And if you marry somebody by name of Hering, you're obviously going to be married to a Lutheran. Well, she was Catholic, wanted the kids baptized as Catholic, but he wouldn't give permission. So she hid them in the outdoor oven for 3 days. Kept them dry and warm. Oven obviously was not going, but it would keep you warm in the night because the temperature would drop. But you know, they were fine, and she'd feed them till he relented, and then she brought him out and had him baptized as Catholic. You know? Getting you to the wedding traditions would be the fact that you got Catholics marrying Catholics. So my grandfather's name was Joe Sr. He didn't know he was senior. He was just Joe. He came over in the 1870s, and he would have been 23, I think, when he came over, which is prime age to be married. He still wasn't. Came over with his brother John. My grandmother was out in the yard jumping rope with her friends. And they said, you have to come in. What for? You're going to church. Got to get cleaned up. Get yourself all cleaned up, dresses up, changes clothes, go over to church, and she gets married. She was 14 when she was married. That we do have in the record books. So
she didn't know who she was marrying?
She probably knew. Well, they had to because he helped mix all the concrete for this Schuller Chocolate building that's on Franklin and 2nd, that great big six-story building.
That one?
Yep. Yeah. And they said he would come home after working there 12 hours. He had to be there an hour before everybody else came. He had to mix the mud to have it all ready for the bricklayers and stone layers to come in. They said he'd walk home after carrying a wheelbarrow. He'd walk down the street like he was still carrying a wheelbarrow.
Oh.
12-hour days, 6-day weeks. And so I'm sure she would have seen him. And his detour was over to Slops to get a bucket of beer and come home because, where did you get Advil to take care of your sore shoulders?
Right.
or ibuprofen or even an aspirin. None of those were invented. So, and the old country, I mean, it's still, people are married at 12, 13. Yeah, it's common. Sometimes the arranged marriages take place before that. Anyway, all you would have done is for that preparation is go over and talk to the priest, and he too would be involved in making the decision. This isn't right. He doesn't have a job. He's a good for nothing. He drinks. I'm not going to have this wedding, you know, that sort of thing. And so the kids would have allowed parents, there was a much closer situation, to be involved in their decision making. Now you have to fall in love. They celebrated, that's kind of a fable that's told more than anything else about the Polish wedding going on for 3 days. Well, from a practical point of view, we are great friends with people in Independence and Arcadia, the Roshkoshes, Garoks, and my grandmother and their grandmother were fast friends. Well, 1870s, 1880s, you didn't drive a car out there. There weren't any cars. But you could go there by train. So if you were going to come to a wedding, they would send you an invitation a month ahead, maybe a week ahead, maybe not at all. My grandmother didn't send out invitations just the next day or that day. But as the kids got married, they would send out invitations. And you would come to town by train. Well, you wouldn't come the day of the wedding. You had to be there to make sure you were there. So you'd come the day before. You'd stay at their home. You'd stay for the ceremony. They'd feed you afterwards. They'd feed you breakfast, dinner, and supper. Plus, you went to the reception. You'd have a big party and a dance that would last all night. Then you, not all night, but, you know, into the hours. And then next morning, they give you breakfast, put you on train. So it's a three-day wedding. But everything would have been like that, even a funeral. If they knew you were dying, they'd come for 3 days. Because that's the only way you could travel. Even if you came by horse, you had to leave the horse rest. So you wouldn't turn around and go back same night. It would be too late. So you'd stay over. And there were all these complications. Was there a bridge up in that time? When was the first bridge built? They had ferry boats going across before the bridge, and the trains went somewhere in between ferry boats and bridge time. So, are they railroads, rather? But that would have explained how things would have taken place. Now, they would generally marry within their little enclave, you know, the East End was Polish because there were two sawmills. Empire was down four blocks from here, and Laird Norton was right here across the street. And so the Polish people settled close by to that. You didn't come from the West End. How would you meet anybody down here? You went to St. Stan's School together. There were 600 kids in the school. You generally didn't go past eighth grade. At the beginning, you didn't go past the third class, which was probably First Communion time. But First Communion was not at 7, it was at 12 or 13. And that was probably the end of your education. So you would meet people that way, and who were in your neighborhood, and they would generally be Polish and generally be Catholic. And the closer you got up to the St. Martin's borderline, you would start meeting Germans. Then, same thing, as you got a job and you worked in town, second generation could work wherever they wanted. But they still had no schools because there was no education. So the third generation got the schooling, got to be teachers, managers, owners, all those things. So Polish people are known for being hard workers, thrifting, industrious, and honest. They illustrate that in Chicago to say that by the time they were finished with the second generation, they not only owned their own home, but their homes were all paid for. And they generally built a two-story house so they could rent the top floor out. And often they rented to other Polish people or your own family. My folks rented their house, of course, to my sisters and their husbands when they were married, till they would save enough money to buy a home of their own. made sense. So you were generally used to renting to your family. Funerals, there weren't mortuaries at the beginning, so you were waked, which means someone stayed awake with you in your home. And they would put the body on a board that they carried. And often the caskets can go vertical. But I think both of those came with covers you could put on before you put them in the ground. You would put that casket somewhere along the wall, or you could lay it flat on a couple of sawhorses. That's where all the fables again got started about. You'd go in there and you'd make your visit. You could come after work because guys had to work till 6, 7 o'clock at night. And by the time they get cleaned up, it's 8 o'clock. You'd go there to visit, offer to pray a little bit. And after you were there 15, 20 minutes, come on in the kitchen, we'll pour you a drink. Well, you're just home from work, so have a sandwich, piece of cake and some cookies, and now it gets later and later. And then someone had to stay through the night. People came, older people came later and later. And then you'd usually get a couple of guys who would come, and one of the stories that was told was that on the southeast corner of High Forest and 3rd was a tavern. Now it's an empty car lot. These two guys that were waking this guy who had died were kind of bored with sitting there, so they decided that they would, it was just only a couple doors away, they took the dead guy, and one guy under each shoulder, and went over and leaned him against the bar, because they're used to being vertical. You know? His eyes were closed, and he stood there, hands at his side, and they'd order three drinks. This guy drank his, and one guy drank the third guy's drink. And then next time, this guy would drink two drinks, that guy would drink one drink. And then time to leave, and the barkeep says, "Who's going to pay up?" And they said, "It was his idea." Of course, you know, he grabs him and says, "Now pay up." And he wouldn't even answer me. His eyes are, you know, closed. And he cracks him one side, then, "Now pay up." And the guy falls over. And they say, "Oh my God, you killed him." And this story is told almost every nationality. It's very believable. It's kind of fun, but it's more than likely not true. So generally, and without embalming, you had to be the next day. So you only got relatives close by, but by then, generally you could get a message. If it was critical enough, you could send telegraph. Telephones were coming into being by the turn of the last century. Everybody didn't have one, but you could borrow one. And they'd get the message to each other. And people could come 30 miles, 20 miles, see. And the part you needed to know was that Winona's Polish people, the Kashubian Polish people, we come from an area in Poland that's only 20 miles in diameter. They also settled in Winona in an area 20 miles in diameter. So we are in Winona, city people, but they're also in Dodge and Pine Creek, the Twin Cities. And they're also in Trimplo and Fountain City. And my great-grandfather lived in all those cities at different times. He also made three trips to South Dakota to homestead. So, and that was before the 18th. He was here in early enough to fight in Civil War. Oh. Not as a citizen.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, in his time, there were people that would go to Pine Creek for on business. It's an all-day trip by horse, but if you knew that someone's going there and they were delivering mail by that time, tell the mailman or send the note, hand it to the mailman, he'd deliver it next day over there. They'd get the message, they'd be there in a day and come back. But it generally took a couple days. And then as we got citified, the church started to have regulations. Then there was a waiting period. You had to make your announcement, and then it would be published in the church bulletin. That, you know, 3 months ahead, there'd be the banns of the marriage. announcing that these people are going to be married, this woman and this man, and this is the date they'll be married. And you had to do that three times. So anybody objected to the wedding, they could make their objection known. Well, that all came later, as we were more civilized.
We want to thank Father Paul Breeza for taking the time to let us get acquainted with our Polish heritage over these past few weeks. You've been listening to Culture Click on KQAL. Stay tuned next week for another episode. Culture Click is a great way to discover the cultural diversity of the Winona area and promote awareness and understanding of individuals in the community. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.